Hi, this is Father Bill W. here in Austin, Texas, and I want to welcome you back to the podcast. I am an Episcopal priest in long-term recovery. In December, I celebrated 47 years in the fellowship, and for that, I'm very, very grateful. I hope you have visited, or if not, I would encourage you to visit our website called Two-Way Prayer. It's the practice that was done in early AA. Comes out of the Oxford group, and I think you'll find it a tremendously helpful part of your program if you will begin doing that practice, as many of us have begun. You can also follow me on Facebook under the title Father Bill W. And if you have any suggestions for future series, or if you want to make any comments on the programs that we've offered, please write me. I'd love to hear from you. Drop a line at Two-Way Prayer, T-W-O, Two-Way Prayer, @gmail.com. Now, with that out of the way, we're continuing our series where we're exploring the spiritual origins of AA. We're trying to answer the question, how did our 12 steps emerge out of the Oxford group? And what was it that the pioneers in AA experienced when they were working the program that became the steps? Because I think it was much simpler than we have it today. And I really believe that by learning some of this history, it can help people work a more successful program and have greater benefits in program outcomes. And that's what I'm really interested in. So we're using a book to kind of dig into some of this material. It's a 1938 book published with the title The 8 Points of the Oxford Group. It was written by C. Irving Benson, a Methodist minister down in Australia. And you can download it for free. It's one of the reasons I wanted to use this book. Or you can also buy a reproduction from Amazon. And this episode that we're working on is his fifth chapter. And I guess like our own fifth chapter in the big book, I think it's really central and important and probably his very best work. It's titled, Be Still and Know That I Am God. And it's about the practice that Oxford Group members participated in. And it was called Quiet Time. Now, Quiet Time was for me probably the most important discovery when I started doing my research into the history of AA. And I was reading from Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers when I came across a story about John D. Rockefeller and how AA, how Bill Wilson and the new AA that was coming to be, Big Book hadn't been published yet, how they were approaching the old man for money. And before he was going to give any money, he wanted to understand what was at work here. Why was it that alcoholics were getting sober via this program when historically the rate of recovery had been rather dismal? So he dispatched his secretary, a fellow by the name of Frank Amos, and he sent him out to Akron, Ohio, back in February of 1938. And Amos went there and he interviewed lots and lots of people. Lots of people in recovery, Bill and Bob interviewed them, spoke with judges, spoke with nurses, spoke with all sorts of folks to just get a sense of what this program was about. And one of the things he was interested in was, what was it that they were doing that made this program successful? And he wrote a report. You can get this also on the internet. Just type in Frank Amos AA report, and I'm sure it'll come up. Dick B did a lot of good research on this, and he'd be the one to go to if you want to really find the report and his commentary on it. I think is helpful. Anyway, what he says in there is this: that he, the alcoholic, must have devotions every morning, a quiet time of prayer and Bible reading. And a little bit later on in his report, he says, it's important, but not vital, that he meet with other reformed alcoholics and form both a social and religious comradeship. Well, today that's absolute heresy in just about any 12-step program. See, we have switched it. We have flipped it. We've made it all about meetings, meetings, meetings. And by the way, if you want to do a little prayer and meditation, I guess you can, but we're not going to stress that. And we sure as hell don't want to scare you away with too much of this God stuff. I understand that. I understand that. But I just want you to know it ain't how it used to be. How it used to be was the stress was on the prayer and the meditation. And that really came as news to me. You know, I mean, my own practice was, I was raised on the stuff that most people are raised on, even today. You know, 90 meetings in 90 days. But the moment of silence, times of silence, that was not really talked about too much. I mean, the remnants of this is when we have our moment of silence at the beginning of our 12-step meeting, and, you know, gosh, if you go more than 15 seconds, people start getting really nervous. Well, truth is, we don't like to be alone. We don't like to be by ourselves. We like to be entertained. Egos like to be entertained, you know? But it's in the silence that we really face ourselves. And that is probably one of the scariest things that we have to do. And yet it's also therapeutically one of the most healing things that we will ever do. So my own practice, you know, smoke a pack of cigarettes, drink a cup of coffee, and read the 24-hour book. Early 70s, that was kind of the standard practice. And I didn't know back then that the meditations that I was reading in that 24-hour book were actually the guided writings of two women in England who were doing the Oxford Group practice of listening for God's voice and writing it down during their quiet time. So let's dive into Benson's chapter here and see some of the things that he has to offer us. He begins by stressing, as did Amos, the necessity for a morning quiet time. And what he says is this, and I think it's an interesting take. He says, it takes time to know God. It takes time to believe. It takes time to know God's will. It takes time to know the mind of Christ. To know God requires more than a hurried nod and a passing glance. Regular quiet times are essential. And then he adds, haste is the death of prayer. You know, I started doing a quiet time a couple of days ago. It was sort of funny. I was in a rush, and I you know, did some of my preliminary work, and then I was down to do the writing. And what I heard from God is, why don't you just go ahead? You're not really ready for this today. And I kind of laughed. He didn't say it in anger, but it was like, you know, this thing can't be rushed. It's important time. It's probably, well, not probably, for me, it is the most important time of the day. And I need to approach it seriously and allow for silence and allow for time. Benson goes on to state that in another section of his chapter, it's titled Making God a Living Reality Through Quiet Time. And he talks in there about an experiment. And that's an important piece, that the way Oxford Group people approached this whole spiritual transformation business was that it was an experiment. And they invited people into the experiment. And what he says in here is, if you will perform the experiment for yourself, you will see. And I think that's a really helpful thing that I got from my studies of the Oxford Group, that Oxford Group people thought of this as an experiment. And I think we've lost a little bit of that. If we approach the 12 steps as an experiment, and heck, just label them that, that when a newcomer comes in, we want you to come into this little laboratory that we've got here, and we want you to go through these 12 steps and go through them fairly rapidly, as they did in early AA, so that they can have the experience. Again, I'm going to kind of keep coming back to that word experience. So here's what he writes in this little section. He says, it is inevitable that if we spend 16 hours a day thinking about the affairs of the world and 5 minutes thinking about God and our souls, this world will seem about 200 times more real to us than God or our souls. Don't argue that God is unreal to you. Rather, give him, or better, yourselves, a fair chance. See, that's there's the invitation. Try this thing. Experience it. And you will have a breakthrough that brings about an experience of God. Carl Jung was once asked if he believed in God. And I liked his answer. He thought about it for a second. He said, believe? No. I don't believe. I know. Well, he goes on to say, how does one know? One knows through one's experience. And if you've had the experience, you're not going to doubt it. If you're living on the experience of others, then you can only have belief, perhaps. But if you have an experience of the thing, then it becomes your own. And that really is the whole purpose of the 12 steps, to have an experience of God, to then build that into a relationship with God. And that's why the two-way prayer is so important, that by doing that practice, a sense of intimacy begins to develop, an intimate relationship with the God of our understanding. And it's a way to access the power that we need in our lives. And God is that power. Benson writes, we cannot create power. We must receive it. And there's that thought, you know, lack of power is our dilemma. We have to access this power. This power is going to come from God. We may not understand who this God is or what this God is like, and more on that in a moment. But we know it ain't going to come from us, so it's got to come from outside of us, or psychologically and spiritually, from the deepest part of us. That's not a contradiction. And that's the attitude that we must bring to our quiet time, that we're going to receive something here, something that we very desperately need. And so it's what I call receiving mode. You know, it's like, okay, park the ego to one side and begin to genuinely listen, and listen from the deepest parts of myself, being receptive to God, being in his presence, consciously moving into an awareness of presence. His next section is titled, Let Go and Let God. That may sound familiar. Remember, a lot of the phrases that were used in AA had their origins in the Oxford group. So here's one, let go and let God. This little section could come right out of the big book. Here's what Benson writes. He is God and you are not. Sound familiar? Be still, leave off, let be. Things begin to happen when we let go and let God. We need a wise passiveness. We have to be still until our receptiveness is developed. Now, one of the things the Oxford group people often began their listening to God portion with was a phrase. It comes from 1 Samuel, from the Old Testament, chapter 3. And Eli is the master, and Samuel is the young assistant, and they're in the temple. And Samuel hears a voice calling him. And he goes and wakes up old Eli and says, What'd you want, Eli? And Eli said, well, I didn't call. Go back to bed. Kid goes back to bed. A few moments later, he hears the call again. And he gets up and goes to Eli and says, what do you want? Go back to bed. It wasn't me. Third time it happens. Third is always the magical time, you know, in spirituality. Third time is the one. You're heading towards a wholeness with this now. He comes and he hears the voice again. And this time Eli says, well, when you hear it, listen. Listen. And so that's what Samuel does. He says an expression, again, that they used when they began their quiet time. And I did this for many years, still do it on occasion. And the line is, speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. See, that's the attitude. That's the attitude. It's an attitude of receptiveness. It's an attitude of openness. I'm ready. I'm needful. Please speak to me. And then they would begin to write. Benson says, God has a plan for every life. He will make known to us his plan if we give him a chance. One of the things I find alcoholics and addicts, we most desperately need in our lives is a sense of meaning and purpose. And the meaning and the purpose come, I believe, in large part through this new and enhanced relationship with God, where I am now doing God's will and seeking God's will and finding it and then performing it becomes the most important thing in my life. It is the thing that gives meaning to my life, and my life is unique. I know we don't like that. Alcoholics sometimes say it's terminal uniqueness, and we're cautious of that. Well, I'm going to go get risky out here and say, no, everyone is unique, or you wouldn't be here. And the reason that you are here is because you are unique. And because you are unique, God has a plan for your life, not for every life, not for the guy down the street or the woman next door. He has a plan for your life. And that's the thing that gives the genuine meaning and purpose to recovery. So the quiet time, well, that's why it was vital, because this is how I am going to experience this for myself. So he then has a section on how he does the quiet time. And that's important because there is no one right way to do a quiet time. And they were pretty strong on that. It was rather subjective. You know, you sort of figure that out for yourself. There were parts that people did, and they were common to them. But they would not say, you got to do this, and then you do that, and then you do the other thing. It was not mechanical. What works for one may not work for another. And what works for somebody now may not be the way your quiet time is going to look 3, 4, 10 years from now. So they have a way of evolving. They have a way of shifting. They have a way of changing. And we have to listen to where God is guiding me. What kind of books is he asking me to read? What kind of prayers is he asking me to say? How does my listening take shape? Each individual is somewhat different in this. And Merton said something I thought was really helpful. Thomas Merton, the Trappist monk, he said, if my concept of God isn't changing over time, something's really wrong. That the God that I knew 5 years ago is not the God that I know today. And if it's the same God, you know, something's not happening properly in my prayer life, because there should be a deepening experience of God. And through that experience, the relationship is changing. My understanding of God is shifting. It's getting ever deeper and deeper. And it will never arrive. You know, that's the only change I'd ever make in AA is it's God of our non-understanding, you know, because we don't understand God. But again, we can experience God. If I try to understand God, I'm going to go crazy. But if I try to experience God, I'm going to go deep. And that, I think, is the direction in which we are really being called. So Benson hits some highlights of his practice, and I think these can be helpful. Like many, he advises reading Scripture, and the pieces of Scripture that were most prominent in Oxford Group circles: Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7, 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter, because of the four absolutes, as he said a little bit earlier in that last section, that last episode on the four absolutes, he said love is the greatest of the four absolutes. And it's what honesty, purity, and unselfishness lead to. They lead to love. So love and service are our code. Letter of James was the third one. And again, AA was almost named the James Club. So many of our practices come from that. He says something interesting after this. He said he uses a hymn book. And I thought that was kind of odd. A hymn book. Why would someone use a hymn book? Well, if you listen to some of the hymns, they may not be very good theology. In fact, in many cases, they're pretty bad theology. But they're beautiful poetry. They're beautiful poetry. And what I found myself doing was using my iPhone, go to iTunes. I have several hundred hymns that I've collected when I was doing services. I'd play them. And I started playing some of those hymns, gentle hymns, quiet hymns, reflective hymns, beautiful hymns, poetry put to music, and listen to those. And when I'm doing that, it's my irrational mind that is at work. You know, the irrational mind. Hey, the irrational mind that is at work. And that's where God exists. If I try to find him with my rational mind, I'll never find him. But if I try to find God through my irrational mind, and that doesn't mean wrong, it just means doesn't have to be concrete, logical. It has to be spiritual, like poetry is spiritual. You see, use the poem. Nice example. You know, my love is like a red, red rose that gently blooms in spring. Well, does that mean that my wife has thorns, petals? Of course not. But it's an analogy that opens my heart up and opens my mind up to a different kind of experience. All right? One that is not bound by rationality. And that's where you're going to find God. You know, Moses finds God in a burning bush, you know, that doesn't get consumed. Well, that's illogical. That's irrational. Well, that's why it's there, you know. So those images that are contradictory, opposed, opposites, that's where you're going to find God, and it's the clash of those opposites wherein something new comes into creation. So. Anyway, I'd encourage you to do that. If, you know, just play a hymn, a gentle hymn, a quiet hymn, and let your mind sink into the music. Makes a nice part of a quiet time practice. He then goes on to say, I expose my life to the four absolutes, checking where I have failed, seeking pardon and power. So I went to, you know, see a guy in who had gotten sober the day after Bill Wilson got sober back in 1934, got sober through the Oxford Group, and I've told this story before, but I said, what's the quiet time about? And he said, it's all about the four absolutes. So if I'm sitting there trying to live into honesty, into purity, into unselfishness, and onto love, into love. That's where my consciousness is undergo a tremendous transformation. Then he says, I then surrender the day to God, that I may be completely at the disposal of his will. Then he says, I listen. The Oxford Group, this is a quote, the Oxford Group strongly recommends the keeping of a guidance book wherein we write the inspired thoughts that come in waiting. We write them down, and then we share them, as I've said in other episodes, we share those thoughts with another person who's also listening to God. And if they meet the standards, if they meet the test, are they honest, pure, unselfish, and loving, I act on them. And that makes a really beautiful flow of step 10, where I'm taking my inventory every day. By what? By the standards of honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love. Where I'm then listening in step 11 for God's voice, for God's guidance. And then in step 12, I act on the guidance that I've received, if it passes that test. And again, they were not stupid people, you know, and they're not going to be told, you know, go bet $500 on a pony at Aqueduct or something, you know. That doesn't pass the test. But if it is to apologize to somebody, if it is to reach out to somebody, if it is to let go of a resentment towards somebody, and even if that somebody is yourself, you know, maybe most particularly, to let go of that and to find God there. And he ends by saying, they that wait upon the Lord will renew their strength. It's a quote from Scripture. They will rise up with wings of eagles, and they will not grow weary. They will walk and not grow faint. You know, I'd kind of hit a block when I discovered the history and really got into it as deeply as I have. And my AA program was getting flat, and it needed to really get renewed, I guess that's the word. And it did, and it happened through the history, and it happened more importantly than anything through this practice of a daily quiet time. So I hope some of this information has been helpful to you. Can't stress it enough. Think it's what really is needed out there in 12-step recovery. If you want a little bit more history on it, go to the website on Two-Way Prayer, and it'll be helpful. Or start reading about quiet time. Dick B has some good stuff on it on the internet, and probably the best way is to just jump in and start doing it. Nothing beats the experience. So again, hope this was helpful. If it was, let a friend know about this podcast and about the series, and God bless and keep coming back.